My first guest this morning is Sally Blakemore, and later on in the show we'll hear from Victoria Price, so stay with us here at KSFR. Good morning, Sally. I'm so glad you could be here.
Hello, Hollis. I'm glad to be here.
I think this was a record that you actually showed up at 7:30 when I got here.
Absolutely. Punctuality deluxe.
Yeah, and thank goodness you did, since we had a little technical glitch happening.
No problem.
Yeah, but it all got solved, and here I am with Sally and some of her incredible artwork. Sally is an artist, a rather famous book designer, the creator of pop-up books. You may be the most best-known pop-up book designer in the country, at least. And she is a marimba player par excellence. Today we're going to talk mostly about Sally's art. Her website, if you want to check it out, is artyprojects.com. And Sally is doing a salon at Site Santa Fe this weekend on Sunday, November 3rd, from 1 to 4 p.m. And it is an arty workshop for children of all ages, big and little kids alike. That means 60-year-olds can come and 6-year-olds.
Anyone with scissors and a piece of paper can come.
Do they have to bring their own scissors?
No, we have everything.
Okay.
And it's free.
Yeah, free workshop. Uh-huh. And the only thing about it is that there's limited space, so you might want to call and make reservations. The number at site to call and make reservations for Sally Blakemore's workshop is 989-1199. They're probably not open yet, but they will be soon. And by the time we're done with the show, you're definitely going to want to call. So, Sally, I'm sitting here looking at some of your latest work. You are one of those folks whose creativity just sort of leads you down your path.
Materials attract me. And since college, really, I've been working on shadow and light. And so these, because of a production problem where I accidentally ordered 7 250-foot rolls of corrugated cardboard instead of one, I went, ooh, this is a cool material. And I started to play with it. And what I wanted to get was the synergy between two inexpensive products, paper that you can find in dumpsters, and you can cut up. This is actually archival paper I'm using. But you can use any kind of cover stock or anything to make these. So what I'm doing is taking a white piece of paper, it's like a cover stock, about 80-pound, 100-pound, and just stream of conscious, kind of using an X-Acto as a pencil. And I'm drawing in negative and positive space.
So you don't actually draw out these things and then cut them out.
Oh, just go
you
for
use
it.
The X-Acto knife as your pencil and just draw these. So just for the listeners, let me try to describe what I'm looking at here. So they are cylindrical forms made of corrugated cardboard, about, I don't know, 14, 15 inches
15,
tall.
You're good.
Oh, I'm good. And there's a cylinder she's made of this corrugated cardboard, and then she's cut a window into the side of the cylinder. And in this window is a zoo. She's cut out these in white paper, little animals, human figures, and flowers and other things, and they peek out of this cylinder of corrugated cardboard, and then underneath you've placed an LED light source so that they're lit up, and you get this sense of, like you said, the shadow and light, this very playful
and very soothing at night. Well, one thing we were going to do is build a whole table setting for like the holidays and have these instead of candles. Because they glow in this beautiful blue light at night. And it's very soothing in a room. You find yourself just looking at them.
They're just rather amazing, and they do evoke the pop-up book idea, because these little pieces of paper stick up with their dogs, and I don't know, what's that, a goat up there?
Oh, there's a goat. That's actually a modern nativity.
There's a swan or some kind of that a
goose? There's a lot of birds. There's a goose. We even have snakes and some, but it's all nature, all good.
So for your workshop, you're going to facilitate people doing this kind of work.
I want people to have more fun with three-dimensional, because I think some people stop thinking it's more complicated than it is. And so if you just start playing, I learned this from James Diaz. He was my mentor, and he said, just start playing, and if you play with paper, the paper will show you what to do. So as you just play and create, you get lost in all these pieces. And then you can make several different kinds of things. You can use them for V-folds, which is what the cards are made of. And they make dimensional out of this two-dimensional shapes and form. Then we also have the shadow boxes.
So what this looks like, Sally is holding up something that looks like a square of, when it's folded up and closed, like a square of corrugated cardboard, and it's got a little tie around it. And you untie the little tie, and you open it up like a book. It opens up just like a book, and then up pops this extraordinary paper scene that she has carved.
And they're all different. Everyone's different because they're all hand cut.
They're amazing. They're just amazing. But, you know, Sal, I look at these things and, you know, and we have these preconceived notions about artists, and and a lot of that has to do with, I mean, they're stereotypes, of course, but, you know, that artists are kind of airy people. You know, they're up there in the clouds and they're just conceptual and all that. And I look at these pieces and I see an engineer.
Actually, I'm a paper engineer. Not the best, but I do have some learning disabilities when you're dealing with left and right and everything. So I think that what's fun for me and for children, I give a lot of workshops, like at libraries, and I did one all over the state about 5 years ago. I went to Farmington, Bloomfield, all the corners. And we taught all the librarians how to make these things for after-school programs. And then all the teachers took it into their own school classroom.
Wow.
So it was really fun. So I've been doing this since 91, and I've discovered more and more about just playing with paper, seeing how the tactile qualities of paper, and particularly with this corrugated cardboard, it's been reinforced. It's all recycled. You know, we're using the same cardboard back and forth from China. It's ridiculous kind of shipping. But when you play with this, the strength of it stays in the paper, so you can wad it up, and you can make soft cards, or you can make rigid cards. But it's extremely versatile.
Wow. And you meant to order one big roll of this corrugated cardboard, and you came home one day and...
And UPS had delivered seven 250-foot rolls in my door in the rain, and two of them had swelled up so huge we could hardly get past the door. We had to leave it outside.
So you need this workshop at Site Santa Fe as much as they need you, just so you can get rid of
the material.
You know, you told me a really interesting story the other day about how you came to be doing this sort of stuff. And it has to do, it's such a Santa Fe story, although it didn't happen in Santa Fe. It had to do with a psychic in New Orleans.
Yes, it was really interesting because I'd gone to the university. I went to North Texas State, and then I went to the University of Texas and graduated with a BFA. And I was always interested in something without time, without schedule, no measuring, you know, just I wanted to play. But then I saw this Vedic psychic. She was an astrologer in New Orleans, and she gave an 8-hour reading. And she said, you know, you cannot find your full creative force until you get into manufacturing. And I went, what? I'm a painter, I couldn't manufacture. But years later, I met my husband in 1979. On our first date, he bought me The Haunted House, which was a pop-up book by Tor Lockman. And it turned out that this particular book, I took apart and put back together, really learned the basics. So as we go along in the process, here in Santa Fe, the manufacturing occurred because the mentor that I had worked with, just by buying his books, actually had a studio here by chance. You know how Santa Fe works in synchronicity.
Right.
So I just went, you have to hire me. This is my job, you know. So he did hire me, and I learned everything about paper. in a year and a half, and then quit, started my own company. So basically, the business of it and the manufacturing, I love the manufacturing, but I'm not really great at business. Because I don't care. I just want to make things.
But the pop-up books that you make, most of them become collector's items, right? Because they are produced in fairly small amounts.
Well, actually, the ones we've manufactured through Simon & Schuster, Viking, Dutton. Dutton sold one book that I worked with a writer in Albuquerque to do Peek-A-Moo, which is a toddler book, but it sold 400,000 copies.
Wow.
And it's like, it's become a classic. It started in 91.
And that was a pop-up?
Mm-hmm. It was just a flap book.
Uh-huh.
So the big books that I did with Meg Davenport and Lisa V. Rinko were Simon & Schuster. It took us 4 years to design, illustrate, and sell those books.
And what were they about? What were their titles?
Oh, the one called Circus, a Pop-Up Adventure, is magnificent. And it's funny because we did this in 94, and we actually produced it in 98. And then the world has started to see it. After all these years, like the Chinese just produced a site that just called it a masterpiece. And they took each page, the Chinese, I love it, they took each page into Photoshop and silhouetted it so you can see every aspect of the book. So they have a big site. And it's been picked up by several vintage publishing sites. And also galleries, like 23 Sandy Gallery in Portland carries all handmade art books.
So some of your books are still available. They are still being published, and others have become like collector's editions because small numbers of them were produced, and then it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, I saw on your resume that you did a Harry Potter book of some kind.
No, we actually worked on it was The Hobbit.
Hmm.
So Andy Barron, who was working with me at the time at Artie Projects, he took this project over. He's a fabulous paper engineer. So we worked together to produce that one, and it was way back at the beginning of that cycle. I think all of these sort of happened within 91 to 99. And then I've done some bigger ones, like for Western National Parks, where I did all the illustrations on site at the park. So I went to paint there. That's where I painted everything and then came back and engineered it and then produced the book.
So you're actually doing it kind of from start to finish. You're doing not just the... you're doing both the illustration on one end all the way to the engineering of the paper and making it into... Wow.
And then pricing it for price point for publishers to learn how to budget paper use. Like on this particular drawing, I call this a drawing, but this could also be like a nesting when you produce it, because you have to take each piece and nest it in the paper to see if you actually have the paper for the piece. So you're constantly modifying in the process.
You're way over my head now.
That's why.
I'm talking with Sally Blakemore. If you've just joined us, she's an artist, a book designer, and a pop-up bookmaker, and a paper engineer. She plays with paper, and she's doing a workshop at Site Santa Fe that's free this Sunday, November 3rd from 1 to 4 p.m. It's for all ages, and you can come learn how to cut out paper and make these wonderful things that that Sally makes.
That anyone can make.
Well, I don't know if they can make them. We all can't make them like you do, Sally.
Thank you.
We were talking earlier about your experience in Bali and this Balinese theory about people and creativity and stuff. Tell the listeners
about that. I'd always wanted to go to Bali. In fact, when I was in high school, I didn't even know it existed. And a friend of mine became like a stewardess on an airline. So she flew there, and she came back, and she went, if you ever, ever get a chance to go to Bali, go. So I didn't have a chance, got into manufacturing. All of a sudden, the whole world opened up. I was going everywhere to produce these books. So in Singapore, well, I was going to be there for 18 days, and we had a delay. And Bali's like 2 hours away, and I went, I'm jumping on a plane right now. When I got there, I could not believe it. These are magnificent human creative beings. And they don't have a word for art. You know, it's their life. You know, so that's kind of their magic is in the knowledge they have about creativity. And so, anyway, I went there and I learned, I saw these round stones with these holes in the middle. And they were everywhere on temple grounds, and they were in little fences, like funeral fences. And so I asked what these were, and nobody really divulged it. You know, they said, oh, it's a mortar and pestle. But I could see that it hadn't been ground down. So I was trying to find the purpose of these. We were there on 9/11.
Wow.
So they held us for 8 days. And we were shipped through Taiwan and held in an airport and investigated and all this stuff. But in the process, I learned what the stone is. This book that I bought fell out on the floor and opened up to this page. And this man standing in line was a leader in Bali. His family was part of the royalty. And he saw it and he said, oh, you know, you discovered those stones. And he told me the story of the two gods, you know, the god man and the primate man. So they have this big meeting every year where all the men come to have a council. So these stone chairs they made for everyone. The god men, as they evolved down, had no tail. The primate men actually had a tail, but they wanted them all to be equal at the table. So they carved bowls in this marble, and they would allow the monkey men to sit with their tails wound up in the bowl underneath them. But I just thought, wow, what a wild story, because I'm so interested in Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal. And you start to trace these strains of brain, and you look in France, you know, at those magnificent paintings. Those are Cro-Magnon. But the Neanderthal, it seems like even now, in this state we're in the world, that we still have these two brains working. One of them is totally undeveloped, and there we have Congress.
Congress, the Neanderthal is our congressman,
Neanderthal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And who's the Crow, where are the Cro-Magnon folk?
I think they're all in Santa Fe. We're painting, living in caves.
And we have blue hair. Sally, by the way,
I have to
share that Sally has blue hair. Sally, why is your hair blue?
Well, I used to be a real snot about women who did things to their hair. Like when we lived in New York, I was going, I would never bleach my hair. That's just disgusting. And this woman I knew, who was a fashion designer, went, we're going to get hold of you right now. And they pulled me into this room, and we had this fabulous hairdresser that would come and do six people at a time, same color. So anyway, when I moved out here, I'd already been bleaching it and making it red and all this stuff. And then my neighbor, Christopher Willett, said, girl, you need to go into the bluish range. So he took me into green. It wasn't quite right. And then I found Atomic Turquoise through Manic Panic, which is a vegan product. It says, untested on animals, not tested on animals, only tested on celebrities.
Okay, so that's Atomic
Turquoise.
Atomic Turquoise is the color you're wearing today, which will make you even more fun for all the kids who come with mom or dad or grandma or whoever to the workshop on Sunday.
Exactly.
At
Science Santa Fe. Kids don't really know what I am. They see me as an older woman, but then I have this odd characterization, and it makes me friendly, you know, to them. They can approach me, and even people on the street, I've noticed that with this color hair, everyone is totally friendly.
How can you be afraid of someone with blue hair?
I know. It's weird.
Right.
The power of color.
So you're writing an autobiography, or you've written an autobiography.
Well, actually, I love Gurdjieff. He cracks me up. And all of his travels through the world, you've read Remarkable Meetings with Remarkable Men, or whatever the name of the book is. Anyway, the way he approaches people is very open face. So whatever they are, he allows. And so as I've traveled, just meeting people when I can't speak a language, you know, and I look in their faces, their eyes, you know, say it all. There's the soul right there. So communicating through soul is very easy. You know, it's like when you're traveling and people see who you are, they become immediately playful. Mm-hmm. They're not uptight, you know, if you allow them in. Mm-hmm. So the book is about my start in Texas, working in nursing homes at 18, going on to college, finding the manufacturing, starting to travel all over the world, and how easy it is for people who are just like you everywhere to meet and to do things together. It's not a scary world like people say.
How could it be scary with Sally Blakemore and her fabulous pop-up books and these incredible cutout lamp things with all that corrugated cardboard that you're going to invite kids and families to play with at this workshop on Sunday.
So,
Sally Blakemore, thank you so much for being here. Sally is going to be giving a free workshop Sunday, November 3rd, 1 to 4 p.m. at Site Santa Fe for all ages, grown-ups, kids, everybody. If you're smart, you'll call Site Santa Fe and make a reservation because space is limited. It's free. The number is 989-1199. I think they open at 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So give a call, and we look forward to your book coming out,
hopefully
in the spring, Sally.
Thank you so much for coming.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Hoss.
Yeah. So we're going to take a break now. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.